Hey, you're probably hearing about AI, 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 and you're not necessarily sure what you can do about it. Well, stick around for this episode, and we're going to give you some insights as to how you can get ahead of the power curve. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. I'm your co-host, G. Mark Hardy, and I'm here with Ross Young to talk about, well, AI and expertise and maybe what you can or can't do with it, and recognizing, of course, that this is a topic that is moving so quickly that what we record this week might be out of date next week. Nonetheless, you can't ignore it. You've got to do something about it for your career and for your own personal growth. So we're going to dive right in. Hey, by the way, if you're not already following us on YouTube or your favorite podcast channel, please do so. And don't forget to subscribe to our LinkedIn membership because you'll get not just the podcast, but a real good steady dose of daily, almost useful information, high signal, low noise. We also have a Substack newsletter. So much more for you here at CISO Tradecraft for those who go ahead and participate. Oh, enough about me talking. Ross, welcome back to the show as a co-host. Thank you for your time and expertise as always.
Hey, thank you. It's my pleasure to be back on once again. And I'm excited to talk to our listeners to help them understand, how do we mentor people about AI? How do we get AI smart, if you will?
Well, that's a very good point, because I was talking to my brother-in-law. For those who are watching on YouTube, you'll start to recognize my sister's back bedroom up here in Buffalo, New York. Been kind of a crazy week. I was in Buffalo today. I was in Tampa yesterday. I was in London the day before, and I was in Rome the day before that. So all that running around makes it a little bit tough to kind of do your homework, but yet you have to do so. But here's the reason I mentioned that. So I was talking to my brother-in-law, who's in charge of a QA team. And I said that their challenge was to get things done. He said, we don't have the people, we don't have the bandwidth, the goals that we want to meet there is just too difficult. And I said, have you looked at AI? Because there's probably somebody out there who said, I've thought about that. And the thing that you say is going to take you 4 weeks, I can do in 4 minutes. And so what we want to help you do is not necessarily figure out, hey, how do I get the shortcuts to everything? But understand, what is the scope of AI? What's out there? What's the difference? You know, we've got traditional AI, machine learning, and now generative AI, and then we get agentic AI, and there's all these different forms of AI. So we'll get into those. But Ross, what's your thought right now about where we're going with artificial intelligence? Are we at the beginning? Are we at the peak of expectations? Are we heading toward the trough of disillusionment, if we use Gartner terms? Where are we in the AI cycle today?
I think we're definitely in the hype cycle. Right now, we're seeing it used in a lot of organizations. Everybody's talking about it, but we don't really understand how to maximize the value in it. We're probably overspending on it and not optimizing it. And when that happens, you're going to go into a trough of disillusionment where you're going to say, oh my gosh, we spent millions of dollars for what? I'm not happy with those results. And it's because you didn't actually know how to use it the correct way. You didn't have clear goals, metrics that you could actually measure the value of all of these things. And so we're still in the early stages in the hype cycle, but I think we have a trough of disillusionment coming very shortly.
Yeah, and it happens to everything. I think one of the things you mentioned, though, is metrics and how do we measure our effectiveness? And I think, you know, it's not the number of tokens that we've utilized or you know, minutes or hours spent on AI or how many CPU cycles we've done. But I would suggest it's kind of an ROI calculation. We're back to basic business 101, is that if I'm going to spend so much time and money and effort in creating an AI capability, I need to see a return on that investment, which means better efficiency or less waste or new capabilities or a lot of things that can increase my bottom line. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, I use the term cheaper, faster, better. Really, that comes from the PMBOK, Project Management Book of Knowledge. What is the scope? What is the time? What is the budget? So cheaper, faster, better is just a fancier way to say that. And I think that's the outcome everybody is trying to do. Hey, if a human takes an hour to do it and a machine can do it in 5 minutes, I want the machine to do it. Hey, if humans can only read one page per minute and an algorithm can read 1,000 pages in a minute, I want the algorithm to do it. So there's clear advantages why you want to do these things. We just have to make sure we do it smart enough that it's better than our best person who does the work and not below the intern who can barely handle anything, right?
And you're also right from the point that doing the wrong thing faster doesn't make it better. And so as we try to use AI to optimize different processes, we need to really make sure that what we're doing makes sense in the first place. If we go ahead and we have a bad process and we say, well, I'll throw AI at it or throw automation at it, maybe you do your bad process 2, 5, 10 times faster, but it's still the bad process. So in a way, AI gives us a chance to rethink a little bit about what we're doing. And oh, by the way, if we are using AI correctly, we might even get insights from the AI tools themselves as to where our inefficiencies may exist in our process. And that's really kind of a fundamental new shift in how we do business. Because if I go ahead and acquire a tool, I say I'm going to utilize this tool and I apply it, I decide how the tool is going to be used. But AI is the first tool that could kind of tell you how it can be used and how it might be used better than you might have even thought of. And that's totally different. That almost sounds like we're hiring an employee. Is there any correlation in your mind to how we think about AI, whether it's a technology, or is it really more of an HR without the H, so to speak, that we're bringing on some new capability?
So I first got really exposed to AI in about the 2015-2016 timeframe. And what happened is at that time, data scientists really started growing as a career field and being something that everybody wanted more data scientists. Google wanted them. Every place I knew wanted more data scientists. And the reason why is people kind of saw them as magicians. We could take data and they could tell us things about our data that nobody knew. And now we could acquire more customers, lower our cost of customer acquisition, or any of the things that traditional sales and marketing wants to do with customer data sets. Mm-hmm. Now, this is great. There's definitely huge outcomes in here. And I think the big power of data science and AI is it can be a revenue creator, unlike cyber, which is traditionally a cost. But the downside that I really saw was two things. First, if you didn't have the data in the right format, didn't matter how good your data scientists were, they spent the first year doing data engineering of the data. And the second thing that I really go back to is, what is the goal or objective we're trying to accomplish? Because if you just go and say, I don't know, go figure it out, go tell me what I should know, I don't think you're going to get really good results of that. But if you say, here's a problem I'm trying to solve, I need to figure out which customers I can upsell more to. Is there data that substantiates this where we could actually look through this in our CRM platforms? That's a much more finite problem that then you can try to optimize what's the best algorithms to help you figure out that. And so these types of goal-based outcomes, I think, is where we have to be driving with AI.
That's very good insight. And I think that, as you said, goal-based, focusing on ROI, that we actually get some positive return on our investment. And then even looking at it beyond the perspective of just a dumb tool, but one that you could actually interact with, and it can provide some insights as to what it's going to do. Now, that sort of begs the question, if I'm going to go ahead and I say, all right, I'm going to be the proponent for AI. Not that you probably don't have them already in your organizations out there, but if you want to run to the head of the parade that's already being formed up, you'll need to be able to go ahead and have a solid understanding of your business process. And we've talked about that on CISO Tradecraft for years, is that if you're going to be a CISO, that C stands for business. All right. It means that you have to understand how the money is made, where the profit centers are, what are the activities that generate the returns that keep the organization going. Now, if you work for a government or a nonprofit, obviously it's a slightly different, but you still have a mission to accomplish. And so what that suggests then, if we're going to do AI correctly, we have to first back up a little bit and say, all right, look at my business process. I start with some inputs, I do a whole bunch of transformations, and I have outputs at the simplest level. Where along those lines am I going to gain the greatest efficiency, at which point AI may help me there? Where am I going to find the errors or the improper activities that AI could help me redo my new pipeline? And then ultimately, where is the things that I could actually learn and get better and have this tool advise me? And so that's a different question than we're seeing in a lot of the posts about AI of, oh, I've got this agent doing this, or I've got this way to jailbreak ChatGPT, or this Gemini 3.0 is awesome. Start with the business first. So Ross, what would you suggest if someone's going to be a proponent of AI in their organization, where should they begin to look for the biggest impact, which will create the buzz that would then get them the positive reinforcement to get managers that are on the fence on board and then ultimately get you the money?
Yeah. So within organizations, we usually have a document called a business continuity BCP. I forget what the P is.
Plan.
Business continuity. That's right.
I've written a number over the years.
And the big thing is you're going to list out what are the core processes that the organization has to have in order to survive, right? In there. And there's business impact analysis around each of these things if they go down. And what I would say is if you start to look at the 20 critical business processes and you just put them in a rating of cheaper, faster, better, and say, what's our most expensive business process? What's our slowest business process? What is our worst business process from effectiveness? Maybe we can only accurately predict something 70%. Now, once I know those, I can actually see where the biggest opportunities for transformation are. Now, just because I see that, I'm going to have some type of opportunity cost where I can weight them. And I would create a 9-box where you just have a simple matrix. And so you put on one side the biggest opportunity for improvement. And maybe on the other side of the 9-box, you put what is our ability to deploy this? What is our confidence level that we think we're going to successfully do this? Because, yeah, I mean, we can take home run swings every once in a while, but if every professional baseball player only did a home run swing, there'd be a whole lot more strikeouts and a lot less scoring games. I'll guarantee that. So knowing where the biggest opportunities are with the highest likelihoods of success, I think that is that low-hanging proverbial fruit of what we're all looking for. And you get that when you rack and stack the business processes against these cheaper, faster, better outcomes where you see the biggest improvements.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, when in the consulting world, where I had spent my career, the better, faster, cheaper, we used to say, pick any two. Because if you want it good, if you really want it good and you want it fast, it ain't going to be cheap. And if you want it cheap and you want it good, well, you can get around to it and things like that. But let's go into this a little bit more. So you've got some excellent insight there. And here's the real question that's going to help bridge this for our listening audience. As you know, we built this podcast primarily for CISOs and people aspiring to be chief information security officers. So let me play devil's advocate here. Isn't that IT's job to do this? Why are we in cybersecurity trying to advocate for the use of yet another AI or yet another IT tool? Isn't AI just AI, IT on steroids?
Well, I think we need to help the business. And the best way I've decided to help the business is to help them implement IT the smartest way possible. Think of it this way. Your sales and marketing team, generally not technical. They've never spent a day in the life programming. So they ask for things from IT And oftentimes they just hear delay, 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 don't have enough resources, too slow. How do I do this? It's bureaucratic, it's slow, and they don't even know if they're getting good IT because that's the only IT they know. Whereas cyber, we really know the inside and outside of IT because we're working with them. We grew up in the IT departments. So if I can come over and I can be a mentor or a guide to say, let me tell you how you could build a marketing tool, that would be really cool. It'd be fast. It'd be better. It'd be more secure than what you have today. I think you should do this. Oh my goodness, did you just get a best friend in marketing? Right? They're going to love the fact that you're mentoring and helping them build their vision in an IT way. And that, I think, is the power of how you get these marketing and cyber organizations to really work together. And now when you have marketing and sales dollars alongside cyber initiatives and new IT transformation, everybody's on board with funding this new initiative. And that's where I think the success happens in organizations.
And cybersecurity leading this isn't so far-fetched, and I'll explain why. One of the things that we've faced, all of us who've been in IT security, is shadow IT. People provisioning their own Amazon cloud service at $74.99 taxi expense that doesn't require a receipt, and they pay those bills that way, and then they start building this process. The company depends upon it. This person moves, leaves, transfers, whatever. All of a sudden, they stop paying the bill. The service stops, and everything goes a dead stop. So we care about the provenance of the IT that is running, and that fits very nicely in the GRC, but a lot of times that falls for us. Now, the same problem is going to exist with AI. The concept of shadow AI, where you have somebody over in sales and marketing who doesn't know how to program, but they say, hey, dude, I think I can do this vibe coding thing. So, hey, write me an app that does blah, 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 blah. And off they go. And now all of a sudden they've got a chunk of code that seems to be doing what they think it ought to be doing. And it hasn't passed any sanity checks. It hasn't validated the sanitation of the inputs. It hasn't checked anything in terms of the, you know, this could go sideways very, very quickly. So from that perspective, I argue that IT security should be the lead for doing this. Are we in, that makes sense to you? Or maybe we're just in violent agreement on this topic.
I think we all have to understand our limitations of knowledge. For example, I am not an accountant. I am not a lawyer. I can say, this sounds right to me, but I'm sure I could be breaking some laws if I just didn't know the laws well enough I needed to comply with as a bank or an insurance company or a healthcare provider. The same thing. I may say, oh, this sounds like what we should do from a tax point of view because this is how I do it on TurboTax. But I'm sure that's very different than all the complications you have with, you know, complicated tax forms. So I think we need to understand what we know and what we don't know. And it's very hard to admit that I don't know all of these things. Now, taking that, put yourself in the perspective of someone in marketing. They know how to do marketing. They know what a marketing tool should do, but they don't know that there are data privacy requirements and what the EU AI Act requires for IT applications. It's just not what they've been trained on and grew up in their careers versus cyber and data privacy specialists who just get asked these questions and take this certification, you know, multiple times over. So I think you have to understand that they will build an app that will be functional, but will not be compliant. And so our goal is to have that partnership so that anytime they want to do something, they come to us like that trusted advisor and say, hey, I want to do this really cool thing. How can I do this? And you're like, oh my gosh, that is a great idea. Let me help you. Let's do this together. And now it's both partnerships working. And I think that's how you drive the success.
Well, that sounds like a very good advice. And to a certain extent, that also allows us to go up the executive suite and, if you will, lobby for a leadership role. Now, it's not like we don't have enough to do as CISOs already. And to say, really, am I going to go ahead and stand in front of this big AI train and say, hey, I want to be in charge of you as well? And I think the answer is yes. And the reason being is that AI used improperly could create many more nightmares for us as chief information security officers than it would be for us to lasso and harness and get this thing under control early on. Secondly, a lot of what makes us successful in these roles are being able to influence other executives, whether they're peers, superiors, or even people down the chain, because it's a question I often ask, how many people in your organization can screw things up with a computer? And the answer is pretty much all of them. And how many of them work for you? And the answer is not that many of them. And so as a result, that influence becomes important. And if we do what you've suggested, which is to go to these business units and say, let me show you how you can gain some amazing capabilities and still stay within the framework of legal compliance and the like, because the last thing you're going to want to do is say, hey, this is quick and easy, but it's against the law and or it's against regulation, and you're going to create a lot more risk for the organization. It's not going to look very good when you do your annual bonus report.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things that are changing here, right? We've seen the change from traditional AI to machine learning to generative AI and now agentic AI. And this concept of things like synthetic employees, how do I make an agent that can do the things that humans can do? These are new emerging concepts. The law hasn't been written. I mean, just remember, it takes decades of time before judges review things, say, you know, we need to update these things. Like our constitutional fathers had no idea of computers, let alone computers creating things and not having, you know, ownership like you would in normal traditional copyright. So things like this are just such an emerging set of thing. Now, we are in this largely dynamic changing thing. What do? We don't just put our hands up over our head. We take action. And I think it always goes back to a traditional approach of say, where do we want to go? Where are we today? And what's the gap that needs to be addressed so we can get there? And we really have to always stay on point of what does really good look like? You know, what are we seeing the top companies doing that's going to inspire our organization to think smarter, to do things better?
So you'd mentioned something in passing, but I want to go back to that. You've mentioned different types of AI, like traditional AI, machine learning, generative AI, agentic AI. Let's make sure that we're all on the same path here. So you said you'd start working with AI 10 years ago or more than that. We talk about artificial intelligence, some of it kind of dating back to the 1950s, if you look at the original origin of when we associated that term. But when do we, is this a linear, is this like we go from traditional to machine learning to Gen AI, which you've done in big time the last couple of years, then to agentic and then maybe to AGI and the like? Or are these quantum leaps that really represent huge accelerations, or are these orthogonal where they're completely unrelated to the other? You don't gain any more by generating more traditional AI. It doesn't improve your machine learning. I have to go on a different path.
Yeah, so each of them kind of have their own thing that makes them unique. When you think about traditional AI, a lot of it was like robotics process automation. How do I make things faster, right? Then we had machine learning, which was how do I predict something? And just take the example of if I throw a bunch of dice and the dice always land, you know, on average 3.5 on a 6-sided dice, then I can kind of predict where my numbers are going to go. And there's regression and all sorts of different statistics that will teach you ways to do predictions. And then we have generative AI, which is instead of predictions, it's associations, right? I've heard you say on other episodes, think of the word that follows after peanut butter. What comes after peanut butter? Maybe peanut butter sandwich or peanut butter and jelly. And so it makes those associations, which sometimes are not always apparent to humans, right? We may not have put these associations together, but they have analyzed every word from Wikipedia and put all of these things together in weird patterns that we're like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I like that. And so that ability is changing, right? Think of it this way. If I were to write a 10-page document, that's probably going to take a good hour or more of my time. But I can ask ChatGPT a simple prompt, and it may spit back that 10-page document in just 30 seconds or so. So that's a huge time savings, and it's allowing us to be smarter. One of my favorite things with generative AI is I can have very interesting conversations with it at any time of the day, on any topic I want to, even in things that don't really exist. I could say, like, what does the future of VibeSec look like in terms of compliance regulation in 2028? I don't think most people would be able to answer that question, but it'll come back with something, maybe all hallucinated, maybe interesting data, maybe spot on. We don't know yet, but it gets my mind thinking about new concepts I couldn't have come up with if I didn't have a tool to, you know, start chatting with.
Yeah, and I think you've mentioned a couple things down there that I really like. First of all, by being able to go ahead and run queries on non-traditional answers, things that you don't know the answer to. And oh, by the way, I'm still waiting for that AI model that can say those three words that humans can say, and that is, I don't know. And we've talked about, as you mentioned before in previous shows, it says, hey, there may not be a high probability output, but there's something. It's non-zero, it's 0.001, but you're going to get it, and there you go. So it's not like I don't know. We need to have some sort of a cutoff and a threshold. The other thing also is that as you go forward, as you said, when you go to the generative AI, it's no longer going ahead and doing, you know, your traditional, which is either faster or more precise. The machine learning, we're going to go ahead and we're going to observe the patterns, but here we're going to go ahead and do associations. But as we get to agentic AI, which is in the next level, that's when you're interacting with meat space, if you will. You're not just simply chatting and words come back and you get text coming up on your screen. I could see an agentic AI in the very near future. It's probably out there right now where I say, look, I've been in four cities in 4 days. And next week I may have to be in Washington, D.C. So I'd like to be able to go to an agentic AI and say, look, for my D.C. client, I need to be up there from Tuesday till Friday. And I like to stay at my favorite hotel and my favorite airline and make sure I have dinner on Wednesday night with so-and-so. And it's this type of restaurant. It says, okay, got it. It's got access to my credit card. It's got access to my frequent flyer. It'll book a flight. It will send me the information on everything. And that's at a low level. But when we get more agentic, when we say, hey, here's the controls for a Waymo, or here are the controls for a weapon system, we better really be confident of the integrity of that software that we are trusting, in some cases, our lives to. And that's a huge, huge jump beyond just Gen AI. Are we ready for that yet? Or are we already there and we are just kind of looking around and suddenly realizing, yeah, people are rolling this stuff out?
I think we are. And I'll just give the example of the medical industry. There are fields in the medical industry where doctors have to look at a chart, have to look at an MRI, an X-ray, something, and make a determination on here's what we need to do with the future of this patient. And a lot of these things are so normal, right? Doctors see thousands of people who have the flu. They know what the symptoms look like. They can kind of do that. And there are, you know, thousands of doctors that spend thousands of hours on the exact same things. So maybe they're detecting breast cancer by looking at certain types of scans. So what we're seeing is, how do I take every time a doctor looks at a scan and create what I call ground truth data that says, yes, this person has cancer. Yes, this person has, you know, emphysema or whatever the thing they may have, or no, they have nothing. And now when I have that ground truth data and I look at this image and I do optical character recognition by a machine and it says, hey, we've seen something very similar by 1,000 different doctors and 995 of them has said this looks like cancer. That's a pretty good assurance that this is probably cancer. Is it 100%? Absolutely not. There could be that remaining whatever 5 out of 1,000 that isn't. But that's the type of thing that we need. I call this HAML, human-assisted machine learning, where humans are the ones that kind of create the ground truth data, and then now we use machine learning to train on things. Now, once we create this human-assisted machine learning, the next thing is to automate the heck out of it, because doctors are limited, doctors are expensive, and if we spend, 1,000 hours in waiting rooms and reading charts when they only have to spend 2 minutes, and it's, we already give them the recommendation by a tool that saw the thing and provided it, and the doctor just looks at it 30 seconds, says, yep, that looks clear to me, and they hit the accept button. Now we can process more patients faster, leading to better health outcomes. And these are the types of things where agents are going to go from this manual approval to, hey, we've already seen this is so accurate and it's better than the average doctor. This actually becomes a virtual doctor, right? And now we don't even need a real doctor to issue some type of thing. Now, that hasn't been the practice, but this is exactly what is happening in every other industry. And I think this is going to happen, in these patient care scenarios going forward. Does it come with risks? Absolutely. You could have poison data sources. You could have bad readings. And we have to have oversight and governance and do sampling, just like anything else. Hey, we sample all of these things, maybe 1 in 100, to make sure the process is still working as intended. And this, I think, is going to drive a better state in any industry with better automation, better, true positives, and better, learning for organizations to move faster.
You mentioned a very key term, and that was poisoning. And I'm talking about data poisoning. Now, some of us who look at AI models that go ahead and train and ingest terabytes of data, and it sucks in all the Reddit posts. Well, not everything there is written to scientific accuracy. In fact, an awful lot of it is not. But in an area of medicine, what you're indicating then is, if you will, more of a closed source. You're not going to get people randomly putting stuff as an MD about, well, I solved this headache by cutting off the patient's left foot. That's just not going to get in there, although you might get some goofball out there putting that on the general internet. So that says that if we're going to use AI systems and they're going to have some important impact, in this case, you're talking about human health and possibly even a life and death scenarios, it's absolutely critical that we have provenance on our data, that we've been able to verify the inputs, that those inputs have in fact gone through some sort of a filter or even an initial screening where you're not allowed to put garbage in, because it's not garbage in, garbage out, it's garbage in, garbage stays. And then garbage gets pregnant and garbage gives birth to triplets. And then it comes up in all your information and you've got a totally lost model. And we've seen studies which says very little dab of poison in a model will screw the whole thing up. And if you look at why these models like ChatGPT have a cutoff date from 8-10 months ago, because they're spending tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in electricity in training it. And it's only because we can go ahead and do RAG and other types of retrieval augmented generation to get the current data that we make it functional. So with all that in mind, what precautions can we do as CISOs to ensure that organizations that are going to do safety items, self-driving vehicles, autonomous aircraft, medical things, don't end up doing what our generative AI has today, which is ingesting all kinds of garbage and coming up with stupid answers that could hurt or kill somebody?
Yeah, so I use the term ground truth, which is, what is it we really know? And if we have ground lies instead of ground truth, all our models and recommendations is going to be terrible, right? So this is why we have to make sure we have something we really trust as the truth that we're going to train our models on to make decisions. And the smarter that is to begin with, the better the outcomes will be later. And we've seen examples like Anthropic put out a paper in, I want to say it was October 9th, where a small number of samples can poison LLMs of any size. So imagine you spend $1 billion and train on trillions of things. They found that just putting in 250 malicious documents into the pre-trained data could destroy that LLM of 600 to 13 billion parameters. Crazy, crazy, especially if you say, well, we're going to have a model that's constantly learning from our OneDrive. Well, I don't know if I would call my OneDrive ground truth and a source of data. So I think this is a really big thing of we have to have quality data coming in, and we really need to control access to these things. If anybody and their brother can come into this and upload new things, that's a huge risk that I don't think we want to take if we're spending thousands to millions of dollars to create custom models.
So that's a very wise insight. And so we control the inputs. Now, how about AI agents? How do we secure those? Are those things that we just look at and we just turn them loose, or do we have to have some way to, if you will, keep a tether on it? So if we have this agentic AI and it starts to go off, you know, we can go ahead and either shut it down or restrict it or retrain it. What do we need to do? What are the tools that were out there right now that lets us secure AI agents?
So if I were to make any agent, the first thing I would also ask is, what is the rollback procedure if this agent goes bad? Just think of the example of a airline booking agent. You say, hey, I want a flight on Friday night to go to Las Vegas because I'm going to have a good time. And it says, oh, sure, we'll get that flight right for you, but it books it on Monday. And you're like, what the freak? I don't need a flight on Monday. I want to be there for the weekend. I need a way to undo that flight that's already been booked so that I get the flight on Friday. That's the first thing. How do you have a successful rollback feature? Now, the second thing that I would also say is, how do I have a monitoring feature where I can start to detect what things may be happening in my tool? Why is it making the wrong assumptions? I don't know. We have to go investigate like a Sherlock Holmes novel and figure out what the culprit is. Is it the weighting of the algorithm? Is it the inputs? Is it they misheard your voice? What is it that's really going wrong in this agent? And so I think having those two things, a rollback feature and some type of detailed monitoring where you can start to troubleshoot why it failed. Because if you say, I don't know, the 2000 algorithm features just analyzed and came to a wrong result, that doesn't give me a lot of trust that next time it's going to be fixed. I need something where I can actually go in and figure out how to troubleshoot this to a better outcome.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing inside because this morning I booked a flight on British Air. I have to go back to London. And I'm absolutely certain I put them on this particular date. And when I got my tickets, it was the day before. I'm like, no, I got a speaking gig in the U.S. the day before. How to change? And I called customer service. It took 20 minutes to get an answer. And I'm talking to a human. And then he kind of hinted it's probably operator error. Okay, fine. Yeah, maybe it's my fault. But I'm pretty darn sure that I got it right. Nonetheless, you know, your recommendations are excellent. And also narrow permission sets. If I'm going to go have an agentic system, I want to be able to define exactly what I wanted to do and nothing more. So that if it does exactly what it's supposed to do, the limitations will never come into play. It'll never hit a barrier because it won't try. But if it tries to get out of the box, it can't. And that sandboxing of that, or that limitation of it, particularly when we're testing, as you had said, audit, have a way to log those actions. And if you get to a high level of risk, maybe there should be a human to approve that below a certain level, much like banks do that. A single person can execute a check for so much, but above that, you have to get two officers to sign on it, and that makes really good sense. Now, as we're getting close to the end of the show here, we want to think about compliance and frameworks and things such as that. Now, there's been a lot of development in the last couple of years of frameworks. What's out there today that we could look at to give us some ideas about how to structure our thinking about AI? And do these make the absolute sense, or is this just sort of a moving target? But by golly, we ought to read them anyway, just so we know what's going on.
So there's one document I think all of our listeners need to read, and it's one you probably have never heard of. It's called the Generative AI Intelligence Risk Assessment from the state of California, also known as the SIMM, S-I-M-M, 5305-F. Yeah, I know that's a lot. We'll put a link in the show notes. Don't worry, you don't have to memorize it. But what it's really good at is it defines all the different types of data. So if you think PII is just social, you're going to be in for a world of hurt for where they're going in California. And on top of that, it actually gives a lot of really, really helpful information about minimum safeguards for Gen AI. And so if you're like, what do I need to include? It gives you that checklist of what to follow. And it also gives you a lot of mitigations. Like, hey, here's a risk. We believe there's a risk with inadvertent exposure of sensitive or confidential information. Got it. Here's 50 different mitigations that you could go to choose to minimize that risk. Interesting. Now I have options to actually get out of, you know, having to do things. Maybe I'll take the mitigation of using end-to-end encryption for all data interactions with the tools to prevent inadvertent exposure. So these are ways where we can get smarter. And I'll tell you a thing that I really think. California tends to be such a big state and an early indicator of where the nation is headed. Think of, we wanted data privacy. California Consumer Privacy Act was like the main one that prompted a lot of other states to go similar type things. So I think this one is an excellent document to go ahead and look at AI risks and what we need to do about them. And once again, the name of the document is called the Generative AI Intelligence Risk Assessment, the SIM 5305-F, and we'll put a link in the show notes.
Right. Yeah, the SIM is Statewide Information Management Manual. A couple other things to keep in mind as we look at policies or ideas for AI are going to be things such as the NIST AI Risk Management Framework. OWASP now has a top 10 for LLMs. And even MITRE has something called the ATLAS, the Adversarial Threat Landscape for AI Systems. These are all well-recognized and trusted organizations that have been out there for a while. These frameworks are coming out. Now, as you said, from a California perspective, that's more of a regulatory potential. Something that comes out from MITRE is never going to be a regulation, but it's going to be a pretty good idea and recommend that we ought to go ahead and take a look at it.
And let me just add one more to the mix here.
Sure.
Cloud Security Alliance has put out something called the AI Controls Matrix. And what they've done is they've mapped the NIST AI 600, ISO 42001, and a bunch of other things like the EU AI Act all into one set of 243 control objectives. So think of Cloud Security Alliance as a leader of mapping these things. This could be another way where you could go in and look through what is going to be required by various regulations if you're trying to be omni-compliant.
Yeah, and you did mention, of course, what's going on in the EU. And so the EU AI Act is a risk-based framework, and it's going to require things like safety testing, transparency, governance before deployment. All these things make sense to us from a logical business perspective. But the idea of the EU making that a requirement, which will affect U.S. companies, by the way, and U.S. organizations, if you're doing business with EU citizens. And we found out with GDPR, and we're going to see that with a lot of other regulations, and they don't mess around. They tend to go ahead and put pretty massive fines that are based upon your global turnover. And that's not a term we use in the U.S., but it basically means your total gross income from all sources all over the planet. Even if only a fraction of it are done there in the European Union. Okay, so let's wrap up and summarize a little bit, because it's been an awesome discussion. I really enjoy this. We've looked at AI, and we've talked about the fact that it's moving so fast that any concept or ideas that we talk about AI are probably going to be obsolete by the time this episode is published in just a couple days. Nonetheless, it's important to go ahead and keep moving on it. We looked at traditional AI, which goes back decades, machine learning, going ahead and looking at patterns, generative AI, going ahead and associating things together, agentic AI, being able to go ahead and do some interaction with the real world. We've talked about the importance of a chief information security officer taking the lead in terms of the AI programs within an organization, because shadow AI could really derail an organization, both from an exposure of sensitive data to implementing business processes through some approach by people who are just not IT professionals, they're not GRC professionals, they might try a little bit of vibe coding, And I think vibe coding is like chemistry. A little bit of knowledge is dangerous. With a little bit of knowledge of chemistry, you can blow yourself up. It's only when you have a profound knowledge that you do better. Any other topics that you can think of that we ought to put in our summary before we wrap up for the day?
I think you've gotten a lot of them. I would just maybe go back to a couple of the buzzwords. One, start with a clear goal or objective. Two, understand the ground truth, because bad data in is going to be worse data out. Understand how to roll back things that don't go the way you want them to, and make sure you have a really good monitoring process, because no matter how smart you are, you're going to want to be able to troubleshoot when things go sideways. And if you do those steps, I think you've built a really good process to adopt AI in a very thought-provoking way with proper governance.
Excellent point. So thank you very much, Ross. And for everybody out there, thank you for tuning in and listening to CISO Tradecraft. We hope that this is giving you some great insights that will help you with your career. If so, give us a 5-star or a thumbs up or whatever evaluation. And let other people know where you're getting your knowledge to improve your CISO Tradecraft so you can help others as well. This is your co-host, G. Mark Hardy, here with Ross Young, who, by the way, buy his book. He just released it, Cybersecurity's Dirty Secret. You got a copy of it there? Hold it up. Yeah. Why Most Budgets Go to Waste. It's really excellent reading and make a great Christmas gift. So go ahead and get that. And until next time, thank you for listening and stay safe out there.